This is Renegade Broadcasting. Thank you so much for joining me here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Tonight is October 26, 2014, and my guest tonight is Mr. Dennis Wise, who is the creator of The Greatest Story Never Told. That is Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, which you can find right at thegreateststorynevertold.tv. This is the documentary that has really changed people's minds about one of the most important figures of all time. So, Dennis, it is my pleasure to have you as my guest again tonight.
My pleasure, Kyle. Good to be here.
It's been quite some time since we talked last. You were just finishing up the last few parts of the documentary at that point, and now it has been completed. It was completed in 2013, and it has reached many, many different people. So there's a lot to discuss. Before we get into it, do you want to let people know where they can view the film and where they can get the DVD and all the rest? I mentioned the website, and it's linked in the description, but please promote your work here.
Sure, thanks. Although it's been banned several times from YouTube, there are various versions which you can still see. Unfortunately, one or two of them aren't the complete version, and they're kind of the early versions, which we changed at some point on one or two things. For instance, found out that Hitler was the 55th member and not the 7th member, little things like that. But they can view it at the Greatest Story Never Told YouTube channel, which is the full version. If you've got 6.5 hours to spare, you can watch it in parts. It's probably the best way. And also, again, it's available on the internet, but it is still one of the most sought after documentaries on DVD, which again is available by joining as a member to the website. You officially get the DVD free, and the website, of course, is thegreateststorynevertold.tv.
Fantastic. Now, Dennis, what first inspired you to tackle this topic? Did you always have something in your mind that perhaps you were being lied to about Adolf Hitler? Did this come later in your life? And when did you finally decide that you needed to bring your knowledge to the rest of the world?
Well, I found out around about the age of 10 years when I came home from school and questioned my father why Adolf Hitler had been so evil and murdered so many Jews. And he took me to one side. He fought on the side of the Axis down in the Balkans, and took me to one side and kind of put his side to it and told me certain things which I always remembered. And as I was growing up, I could see various things of the propaganda on the television, which now had two sides to the situation. Like I didn't totally believe, and that probably stopped me in the long term sending my sons away to fight in Iraq or in Afghanistan by joining the army. If I hadn't been a little bit more clued up than a lot of people. But from that age on, 10 years old, and I had to keep it to myself because obviously in the UK. Like Adolf Hitler's name is still associated with probably the greatest evil. But it wasn't until the internet came out a little bit later on that I felt the opportunity was there. And I've done a little bit of video work, although only promotional things, like 3-4 minutes long. And I really had a question to ask myself, do I dedicate the time to do it, or do I just let it ride? And the fact that I had relatives murdered after the war, at the Blueberg massacre down in when the bulk of the Croatians and et cetera, the British kind of held the camps on the Austrian border, and the Croatians put down the weapons, surrendered, and then instead of being shipped to Italy, they were told they were shipped back into Yugoslavia and certain death. And I lost some relatives there. And so it wasn't that difficult a decision when I thought, you know, that needs to be told, that story, and on top of everything else.
So you first began work in 2011. Can you tell us about how you began the creative process? Did you have pretty much all 6 hours mapped out, or did you really just start at the beginning and work piecemeal from there?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me that question. I didn't actually have the 6 hours mapped out. It was, in my mind, it was going to be probably no more than 90 minutes, 2 hours. But I found as I went along, because I was doing it in 15-minute sections and uploading it onto YouTube, and obviously people were picking up on it and waiting for the next episode. It probably took me about a month to do each episode with the research, etc. And so it was like it got to a case where I had to explain why I'd gone down this particular road. I had to then make another video to explain, you know, that reason. And so at the end of it all, when you think about it, it's Adolf Hitler's life was quite, you know, there's a lot in there, especially with the 6 year war. So when in hindsight, I probably, you know, I should have realized it would have took nearly 6 hours.
Yeah, certainly is a huge topic. Now, when you started off doing each individual episode, and I think I caught on around maybe the 8th or the 9th.
Yeah, you caught on, really, yeah.
Yeah, and it was very, it changed my worldview for me, certainly, and it really got me headed down a little bit different of a path than I was already on, and I really do appreciate what you did for me there. And what you did for a lot of other people.
No problem. Mm-hmm.
And what was the reason that you chose, though, to do it in these small chunks, just so it was more manageable for you and you can actually get your work out there? Or was there another reason that you didn't want to just kind of wait until you had it all done to release it?
Well, no, it was quite simple, really. I could only upload 15 minutes at that time to a channel.
Oh, right.
So in a way, it was a good thing because it kind of restricted me from going on too much about some. I had to condense it, and most of them were just around about the 15-minute mark, and consequently, like, you know, you toss them all up like it's 3/4 to an hour, and eventually it worked out at about 6.5 hours.
And were there any sections in particular in there that were harder for you to complete than others, whether it was for emotional or technical reasons?
These are great questions, Cal. Yeah, there were certain episodes which were crucial to the whole 6 hours. One I can think of in particular was actually the death of Adolf Hitler. I know a lot of people are still today think he escaped, but I have to go along with the official story, which I truly believe myself, that he did die in Berlin. And that was a crucial part. Another one was the following episode when Magda was giving the cyanide to the kids, which has always been a sticking point for a lot of people. But once they watched it and realized that the Russians weren't too far away and what the Russians were capable of, they would totally understand. And then the final episode was probably the biggest of them all, because once you've gone through, I think 25, that one was, once you've gone through 24 and people waiting for the next episode, you know, the 25th, if that's a letdown, it lets the whole series down. And that was the toughest, but in the end, it became a favorite.
And now, with all of the different propaganda that's been put out concerning this this time period, this figure, this war, did you have an easy time navigating through finding the proper clips, or did you find that pretty much everything you're working with has an inherent bias in it that shines through. So you had to pretty much tell your own version of things. Basically, I'm just wondering how you went about selecting from all of the different source material what should then go into the film. Well, was it easy? Was it pretty tough to locate some of these clips?
Well, yeah, I mean, there were some, obviously, because a lot of it's been buried and buried quite deep. But because I knew from the story that my father told me, like, you know, there were certain things I knew to look for, which probably, you know, other people like trying to do the same thing wouldn't have had that angle to come from. So once I found that way of searching, then it became a lot easier. In fact, it got that easier that I could actually predict why Hitler was doing things.
That's very interesting. Well, I think you did a wonderful job with it, and a lot of other people agree. And it seems like many, many people have seen this film. Do you know any rough estimate as to how many people have actually watched it from start to finish? I know that it's been uploaded a number of times, and people have seen different segments here and there. But do you just have a ballpark figure?
Well, I don't know the exact figure, but a minimum figure I would say was at least a million. That's just from the YouTube views alone, but obviously it's been uploaded on other video channels and taken off on other video channels as well. But interestingly enough, Reddit.com did a feature on it only a few weeks ago, and three of the people there voted for it to be nominated for people to view. And as soon as it went up, there was a lot of controversy where people felt that, you know, it shouldn't be on. But fair play to Reddit.com, they turned around and said, look, this is a freedom of speech channel, and if you're going to be a freedom of speech, then you've got to listen to the other side. So consequently, all through, you know, a lot of people came back, left some great comments, or one or two comments like weren't that particularly praising. And in the end, there was a kind of a vote for the video of the month. And there were some figures had been altered, which gave this other video what was showing that month the prize. But then they found out that the figures had been altered, like, and changed everything. And so I suppose you could say now that the actual video, although it's banned in a lot of countries and banned from a lot of places on the internet, it is also now an award-winning documentary.
That's great.
Which I'm ready for, you know.
Now, I know that a lot of different people within the alternative media, such as Henrik Palmgren of Red Ice Creations, have embraced your documentary and helped you get the word out about it. Are there any mainstream sources where this leaked out to, or that where they mentioned your documentary, even if just to vilify it?
There has been slight ones, but they've been quickly closed up, if you know what I mean. I know I can't think of her name now, but there was a certain lady on the internet who was almost, you know, mainstream. I mean, I don't think a lot of people would have known her from our world, but certainly the pop world. And it was obvious from the way she was talking that she'd seen the documentary and had understood everything and was now quite vocal about it. But she got quietly closed up, and her Facebook was taken down, and everything else. What happens, you know, to someone who's not pulling the right way for the media?
Oh, that's right. Yes, Tila Tequila is the celebrity there. That's right. She did get quieted up pretty quickly there. Yeah. You know, even though she was fairly easy for the enemies to discredit, she was still saying enough things that were spot on and getting people thinking. And she had over a million Facebook followers. So
exactly, yeah.
That's a broad reach.
That's it.
Now, I'm sure you've gotten a lot of great feedback concerning this film. I'm sure you've also gotten a number of negative comments and perhaps even some threats, but let's first start with the positive comments. What were many people expressing to you when they'd send things in? What were some common themes that they would express?
Well, very much like self, the one line which stands out more than any is life-changing. Once it understood, I always said that once you understand this documentary and where it's coming from, then you understand everything what goes on today. And this is apparently what has been happening, where people now look at things and can understand why they're being done or why they're not being done. So that line, you know, life-changing, was certainly one. Others was from people like who've carried a lot of guilt over the years and have seen a documentary and had that guilt lifted. So in that way, it was more than pleasing, because there's an awful lot of people out there with the guilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's great to destroy any of this artificial guilt that has been hoisted upon us. And it's amazing that white Americans are even basically lumped in with the Germans that they were forced to fight against in terms of sharing the blame for the Holocaust. In America, white people are made to feel guilty for the Holocaust. Either Americans didn't do enough, we didn't get into the war soon enough to save them. It's just amazing how many different preschools will have these alleged Holocaust survivors in to just vilify the Germans and make the Jews into the eternally oppressed people. Now, one of the big myths about National Socialism and the Third Reich in general is that there was an extermination plan for Jews. Mm-hmm. And when people finally see some of these clips where there are survivors, or rather just camp inmates mm-hmm. in the concentration camp, talking about how they were putting on plays in the theater, how they had a mm-hmm. swimming pool, how they were playing soccer games versus the SS guards, and all sorts of other interesting tidbits we never really heard about or never saw in any of the mainstream movies, then the worldview really does start to change and you get a different picture as to what was really going on. Is this one of the things that people were a bit surprised about after viewing the film? And also, what were some of the other things that people found a little bit shocking that they didn't know before?
Okay. Well, yeah, definitely that side of it, the Jewish story, for sure, especially with the transfer agreement. A lot of people, for the first time, heard that the Germans actually helped them go to Palestine with all the belongings, which was never a story that we'd ever heard. It was always the Jews left with only the shirts on the back. And that's all factual and documented, and there's no argument there. But it's been hidden. And why has it been hidden? That is the question. And when you come to the camps, you've got to say, like, compared to a gulag, certainly there's no theatres there, certainly there's no swimming pool there. Certainly there's no camp money there. Certainly they're not receiving money from places like the Jews did in Austria, which was sent to help them. It's quite obvious that it's a work camp, and the inmates have certain facilities. Like I said, you know, soccer matches, you have to be kept occupied. You know, if you're going to keep such a number of people in such an area. And movies was another one. They actually got movies for them, whereas in the Gulag, you were just worked to death and rotted. And if people come with the excuse, well, you know, the Germans wanted to, you know, the Jews exterminating, you know, they would have simply just put them in a field and let them starve and die of thirst.
Mm-hmm. They certainly wouldn't have tattooed them, because there'd be no reason for that. And they didn't imprison every single Jew. It wasn't just a roundup of all Jews, which is another misconception. In fact, many Jews and a lot of half Jews in particular, and quarter Jews, served in the military and actually held high rank. And that's another one of those things that most people just don't know about and changes the whole narrative.
Well, yeah, that was another one, like you just mentioned, and another major one was a lot of people hadn't heard about what had been going on in Poland before Hitler invaded. They were just led to believe that Hitler wanted to rule the world. But what everybody forgot at that time was that England and France ruled most of the world anyway. So that was a bit of a shock when people got to realize that it weren't just a question of invading for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm. Germany was not a world empire. It was something of a little upstart that challenged the massive mm-hmm. global empires who had colonies all over the world. And, it seemed to me from everything I've researched into the subject is that it was England who was instigating Poland to not make any kinds of deals with Germany, to not come to some kind of accord, and getting Poland to talk tough and act tough and commit atrocities against the German minorities living within Poland, and basically forcing Adolf Hitler's hand to go in and rescue them or else see them be slaughtered. And when push came to shove, England actually didn't have Poland's back like they said they would, and Hitler rolled right over them and their hubris.
Yeah, and you've got to remember also, like, that when Stalin was coming from the east, he took Poland and nothing was said. I mean, like, I'm talking like further on down the war when the Germans were in retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So Poland was never really the excuse that they needed for a war. They just instigated a war using Poland.
Right. So any other things that people found a bit surprising about, say, Adolf Hitler himself? Most people will know that he was a painter. He was a rather talented painter as well, very skilled.
Mm.
But any other biographical details that came to light in your film that most people didn't know about beforehand?
Well, I was talking to somebody only the other day who watched it and was quite stunned, actually, at the fact that Adolf Hitler, he'd heard one of the two of the speeches on the documentary and found that this man actually cared for anybody, because his whole impression was he was evil from the big toe to the top of the head. And he didn't actually realise that, yeah, he cared for his country. Yeah, his speeches were, you know, were clearly there to say, like, you know, we need to do this to, you know, to strengthen ourselves and to make a healthy, prosperous nation, etc. So even that was a shock to people. There was a human side to him, which has never been shown from Hollywood and never been shown in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that most people don't even consider is the time between when the National Socialists first take power and then the start of the war. In that short period of time, the revolution that occurred with the will of the people behind it, mm-hmm. in Germany was absolutely incredible and unprecedented. While the United States was wallowing in depression, mm-hmm. Germany was creating one of the most amazing societies that's ever been seen. And the workers loved it, as opposed to communism, which purported to be a workers' paradise. Yeah. National Socialist Germany really was a workers' paradise, with their Strength Through Joy programs, their holidays, their workers' rights. It was also not a bad place for the industrialists either, the business owners.
That's
although they weren't able to make incredibly high salaries that dwarf all of their workers, they were still allowed to be and encouraged to be very productive, as long as they weren't creating a product or a service that was harming the German people.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, well, he built the system up whereas the workers had to respect the bosses and the bosses had to respect the workers. So in that respect, they didn't need unions. So he got rid of the unions and it ended up a fair society where the workers got special treatment on holidays. They went abroad to Italy for a couple of weeks. And this is just not acceptable in any other country at this time. Such things like that is, you know, it was at the forefront of it all. Canteens, for instance, and things like that for a break. So to be a German worker at that time was a joy, and he knew that if he could get that feeling from his workers, then, you know, production would increase. And like you just said, in the short amount of space of time, what there was free from this usury hold of the Jews and things, like of bankers, incredible. It was incredible. I mean, short space of time, within 1936, he was holding the Olympics, you know, in a country which was on the brink of absolute collapse 3 years before. And even then, they had the blockade from 1933. As soon as Hitler got in power, the Jews put an international jury told people not to buy the German goods. So even with that, they were prospering. It really makes you wonder how much these people really do make.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect to National Socialist Germany is that it was fairly progressive by today's standards in terms of at least what some of these politicians pay lip service to, meaning National Socialist Germany was environmentally conscious. It cared for animal rights. Vivisection was one of the first things that was banned.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of different workers' rights, human rights. This was a regime that actually seemed to care. And obviously, no one who watches the brainwashing on the TV and in the movies and reads it in the books and newspapers is going to understand this aspect to the Third Reich.
No, it's true. And I can guarantee people, if you see the documentary and you understand the documentary, they'll never be able to watch another documentary all the way through again, or a Hollywood movie all the way through again. And this has been told many, been told this from many people, because this documentary, I knew at the time, has to stand up to thousands of other documentaries and Hollywood films costing millions, and it's still standing there. And still, any criticism of it is to say it's Nazi propaganda. Keep away, don't watch it. That's all they can say, because they know if somebody watches it, it's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious that what we've been saying, you know, is true. So I just ask. I mean, we don't force anybody to watch the documentary. I just say to people, you watch, you decide.
Not going to strap anybody down in a chair, kind of like exactly. Clockwork Orange, and make them watch this to see the truth. Well, I think that you're right. Once somebody does watch it, it will change them forever. Do some of the critics nitpick about details, though? Do they go in and try to challenge the historical narrative in any way? Or is it simply, as you said, just warning people not to see it because it's Nazi propaganda?
Basically, yeah, and I'm not missing words there. I mean, I often reply to comments on YouTube. Just give me one fact what you find not right, and it'll just come back. Oh, it's Nazi propaganda. Oh, you're a Nazi, and all this kind of carry on. Never do they come with a set of facts to discredit it. But I know they can't do.
Well, sometimes I will see some of these common lies being spread, or at least misconceptions concerning Adolf Hitler, as a way to discredit all of the work that you've done. Namely, Hitler was a Rothschild agent. He had Jewish lineage. He was a gay, degenerate, pedophile, whatever the case may be. Just basically the same old slander over and over again. How do you deal with this?
Well, I try and deal with it sensibly, like, because all these accusations of him being a Rothschild and numerous other of these are all taken from books written after the Reich fell. None of these were written before. And so, you know, it's a turkey shoot on the Reich. Nobody can answer for him. And obviously the name Adolf Hitler, since the end of the war, is a moneymaker. Even, you know, the movies have made millions out of his names, and I'm sure if he had the copyright to everything, like, he'd be multimillionaire today, or at least, you know, his descendants will be. But the fact is that, no, it was a turkey shoot, and a lot of, let's not mince words, a lot of crap came out after the Reich fell and the war was over, and was then told as truth and education.
Yeah, and lies will just continue to be repeated until they're accepted as fact, because they've been repeated by so many different sources so many different times. Mm. Let's talk about some of the facts concerning the atrocities that were committed against the German people, not just the Nazis, but the German people themselves. Mm-hmm. This is a project I'm working on right now with the Hellstorm documentary, and it's incredible. The amount of material that's out there, first-hand eyewitness material concerning all of these atrocities, Red Cross reports, and yet they obviously don't make it into any major documentaries or books or movies or really any of the mainstream culture whatsoever, because this would change people's perspective concerning this good war when they consider how many innocent lives were lost.
It's a little bit like I think a law came out over in Britain saying that only Nazis committed war crimes, when in actual fact, once you watch the documentary and see the facts, what they were, the people at Nuremberg, the Germans at Nuremberg, were tried by actual war criminals themselves, which makes a farce of the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, the brutal bombing of Germany, the aiming of civilians, was the biggest war crime of all, but washed and kept under the carpet. As you say, it's never been shown in any Hollywood movies or any documentaries. And the only thing taught in the education at school is that they deserved everything they got.
Yeah.
ever hear of it.
Yeah. The one little trickle that I think came through for some people was Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, where he fictionalizes his own narrative of being in Dresden and surviving in a slaughterhouse while it was firebombed and then being forced to clean up the hundreds of thousands of dead. And that was actually made into a movie as well. So a few things make it out here and there, but people might know about Dresden while they will still not know about all of the other cities that were firebombed and all of the other hundreds of thousands of people who were incinerated in the most gruesome fashion.
Yeah, well, that type of bomb that was dropping was meant to cause that firestorm. Like they did it in Hamburg, like you said, they did it in most of the city. Berlin was another one. So it's like, you know, by the time the Russians got there, you know, there wasn't much left of Berlin anyway.
Mm-hmm. I see on the site that you have a post there. If people scroll down, it mentions 600,000 dead at Dresden. Tom Goodrich's figures put it at somewhere between 350,000 to 400,000 at the high end.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you get the 600,000 number from to make that figure? I'm not saying it couldn't be correct.
To be honest, that wasn't my piece of work. We have some people at the website, because obviously I'm making videos, et cetera, like, so I am time restricted. So we have people at the website who do that kind of thing, and I'd have to go back and check with them.
Okay.
So I can't really answer that one, but if he's seen it somewhere, yeah, he has seen it somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure. And the fact of the matter is that the figures that are being put forth in some of these documentaries right now are so absurdly low, with 25,000 dead. Yeah, right. That's laughable almost, if it wasn't so tragic.
Figure. Yeah, I think that is the official figure, 25,000.
Wow, incredible. And the lies continue, and they will keep continuing until we just shut them up and put out the truth that is undeniable. Do you think that the mass media, the Jewish-controlled mass media, is going to respond to what you're doing by putting out even more propaganda that directly deals with some of these issues, or are they going to kind of back
good
off?
Question.
Of,
no,
back
no, good,
off.
Good question. Good? Again. Because we haven't really had any real attack on it at all. They've just kind of left it to hopefully just drift away. But it's one of them documentaries which it's like a little bit like a shark. It just appears every now and again, like, and when it appears, all eruptions happen. So, yeah, at this moment in time, I think the tactic is to leave well alone, because, as I said earlier, if anybody goes to watch that documentary to watch it, then it's they're certainly in for a surprise. So, yeah, I think as far as mainstream, is, you know, that door has yet to be conquered, as we said earlier. But as it's rising and rising, and with the internet, you're not quite sure who is watching that documentary. And so anything can happen. We're in an age where, you know, this information, I don't think, has helped their cause at all, because apart from my documentary, there's plenty of documentaries now coming out like with information which was lost before. So the internet, in one way, it has not been a good thing for them, which is probably why they needed the gatekeepers, such as, you know, Alex Jones and a few others, to give them a little bit of truth, but then misdirect them away from things. That's part of your, you know.
That's a good segue to this audio clip that you have on your YouTube channel of a few different people. People can check out this video, The Greatest Story Never Told TV. Look it up on YouTube. Go to the website. And this video has a number of different people, including Alex Jones, Henrik Palmgren, and some of his guests talking about the documentary. So I'm going to play this here, and we'll be back in just 3 minutes, and we can respond to this. And we can even take some people's calls if they have questions, 347-633-9657. Talk to you in just a little bit, Dennis.
Okay.
Anna, thanks for holding her on the air.
First off, I am a Prison TV Planet member.
Awesome, brother. Go ahead and into your points, and I'll hold you over if need be.
If you really want to have an unabridged idea of what is going on today, look at It's actually a YouTube video, but it's a documentary. Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told. He actually kicked out a lot of the bankers because they were trying to implode Germany after World War One, and it was the bankers. And when I was watching that, it was 5 hours long, and I started listening and saying to myself, "Wait a minute, they are just repeating history, but because we are so dumbed down in the sense of our historical knowledge."
Well, I haven't seen the documentary you're talking about. But people can, I guess, check it out for themselves.
The very well-made, excellent, and moving documentary called Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. I want you to do something for me as well, and I would really appreciate it. Before you listen to this interview, I want you to watch the documentary. I know you want to listen to this program right away, but if you haven't already seen it, I want you to stop this program right now and go watch the documentary first. And I'm adamant about watching the documentary because one of the biggest hurdles that the majority of people seem to have, they're basically just kind of set in their ways, and they argue that they already know everything that they need to know concerning this topic. Well, I can promise you people, you don't know one-tenth of it.
I seriously had a panic attack after I watched that documentary, The Greatest Story Never Told. And for days afterward, I was really shook up. It had such a profound impact on me, and everything started making so much sense. And I felt I've always felt kind of betrayed by the powers that be, but I felt more betrayed than ever. Mm-hmm. And I started looking back on my entire life and looking back at all the movies that I'd seen.
I just couldn't believe it. I thought if they could pull off this, then anything is possible. Anything.
Yeah.
That one, I would encourage anybody watching this or listening to this to watch that hasn't seen that documentary to watch it and go back
with an open mind.
Open mind and listen to that interview that you did with Dennis Wise recently.
But that's most likely what got us censored from iTunes, by the way, too, that show.
Yeah, well.
That shows what we're not allowed to talk about. It's off limits, you know?
And that's when I was going through that sort of panic attack realization. That was it. That was the big red flag. I was like, oh my God, like of course we're not being told the truth because we're not allowed to talk about this issue. When you're not allowed to talk about something, then that's like the red flag right there. If it's off limits, then that's the thing you need to talk about the most.
And the rule to remember is that history is written by the winner.
I can promise you people, you don't know one-tenth of it.
Welcome back to the Solar Storm. I have my guest tonight, Dennis Wise, here with me. He is the creator of The Greatest Story Never Told. And Dennis, although your show might have gotten Henrik kicked off of iTunes, I was quoted in the article he wrote about getting kicked off of iTunes, so maybe I had something to do with it as well. But the quotes here he listed were, to learn who rules over you, simply find out who you're not allowed to criticize. That's Voltaire, and I mentioned that when I appeared on Red Ice. And he added my own take on that quote, a little spinoff. To find out who is oppressed, simply find out who you are not allowed to support. And, well, you're not allowed to really support Nazis in our world today. Right, so that does seem to be who has been oppressed and who continues to be oppressed up until today. And that includes anybody that they want to lump into this group of Nazis, even if it's just racially aware people who don't really have much interest in the Second World War. They're still going to be put in this group of Nazis or neo-Nazis, white supremacists. They pretty much lump all of the haters together. And I'm sure you've been lumped into this big old group as well. Have you gotten written up by the SPLC or the ADL yet?
Not as yet, no. To be fair, there's been out of, 100%, 99.9% has all been positive. So, like I said, I'm quite sure they know about it. But I think the tactic at the moment is to stay away from it and not promote it in any way, shape, or form by attacking it. That's my gut feeling. Don't know for sure.
Do you have any ideas for how people can help promote your film and get it into more people's hands? For example, buying some advertisement in some places, perhaps putting up some signs or some, even a billboard?
Well, it's difficult because, and you've got to remember, right, that Germany lost the war. And so the people in charge today are the people who won the war, or at least the descendants. And so anything to do with Nazi Germany is immediately attacked normally, should I say, especially if somebody put a banner up or a poster up or some kind of advertising, then the companies would steer away because of the pressure from these groups that you mentioned earlier on. So it is difficult. The internet really is the only place, and it's not a bad place because a lot of people more and more every day are using the internet. And probably one day they will close some of these doors down. But it's frustrating. But in fairness, if Nazi Germany had won World War II, I'm pretty confident that, they would have hunted every single communist down, just as the communists hunted every single Nazi down, and they're still hunting them today, because a lot of people don't really connect the fact that a lot of these Jews are, communists. And it's a war of ideology, the worst type of war, and it's usually, wipeout time for the losers. And so Nazi Germany was destroyed as a political force, as an army. And so when you get people like Alex Jones claiming that the Bilderbergers are Nazis, Hitler wouldn't have sat down with them people for all the tea in China. He would have just obliterated a lot of them, because they were the people that he was fighting anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, this actually brings me to my next question. Do you care to perhaps surmise what the world would have been like had Germany actually won the war and had the Allies lost? Do you think that so basically, before the war, Germany was enacting all these different social programs, but it had to at least develop its military, and was forced to increasingly do so throughout the war, from a state of not really being too ready whatsoever to get it up to a point where they could be taking out a foe that greatly outnumbered them. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, had they won, the overall look and feel of National Socialist Germany would have remained so militaristic. And I think it might have perhaps changed into something that we don't even know could be possible. What are your thoughts as to the way the world would have gone had the Allies lost?
Well, really quite opposite to where things are today, because, like I said, I'm just doing a new documentary myself, with the Communism by the Back Door, which is what the New World Order is. At the end of the day, the communists won that war, whether you like to believe me or not, the communists won it. And America at this moment is infiltrated, and a lot of the policies are socialist, there's no doubt about it. And everything what went on in Germany before Hitler came to power, such as Berlin with a place of decadence, was transferred to Hollywood, and Hollywood's that place today. The pushing of homosexuality, the pushing of ultraviolet films, pushing the things where the family is broke up. In pop music, you've got these what I call cretins like Miley Cyrus, who's pushing all this decadence and witchcraft and things onto the youth of today. All that would never have happened. That wasn't the policy of the National Socialism. National Socialism was all about people being healthy and looked after, especially the women and the children. And, a totally different culture altogether, totally upside down from what we see today, which is why people who haven't seen the documentary were probably shocked by this. A lot of people are in tears when they watch that documentary and they realize, yeah, this is what we've lost, and this is where we are today.
Mm. Now, before I asked you if there were certain things that people found surprising when they watched it, were there things that you were surprised by when you were researching and making this documentary that you didn't know before about the overall story?
I didn't know for sure how bad the West was. Now, everyone knew how bad Stalin was. And the reason, as I mentioned earlier, down in the Balkans, everybody headed towards the Western section to surrender. They felt they were a lot safer. surrendering to the British and the Americans than there were to Stalin. And there's no doubt if they had surrendered to Stalin, it would have been game over. But the fact that the treaties had been made with Stalin to send everybody back, or in the case of Eisenhower, where he's actually placed all the Germans in a field, give them no food, give them no water, no latrines, no nothing, for health's sake, and then told surrounding towns or villages, if anybody goes there to feed or walk to the prisoners, they will be shot. All that was kind of a bit of a brutal shock to me, even.
Now, Hanshan makes the point in the chat that only the Jew won World War II. And I said before, what if the Allies had lost? And I think he's right there. I don't think the Allies, who you mentioned in the West, were pretty brutal, just maybe a little bit less so than the Soviet Union. They didn't win for long, because all of the Allied countries, for the most part, then fell under the sway of the victorious communist Jews, who implemented a program of brainwashing and subverting the population while also opening up the borders and progressively flooding all of these countries with third world immigrants. Do you agree that the West and Europe and white people in general lost World War II?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, this flooding of Europe and trying to make it into one old state and break down all the nationalities is a communist thing. You know, that's what they do. And I think it was the French prime minister, can't remember his name at the time, but he was bringing out laws to force people to race mix. So, you know, the documentary proves that it is a plan of the Jews, which I class as communists as well, to destroy Europe as a white stronghold. You know, they're going to put immigrants into Sweden and into Norway and into Germany and into, you know, just to kill that race.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is something, this consciousness of a white race is something that is debated, whether or not it was in the platform of the National Socialists in Germany. People will argue that they were pretty much only concerned with Germany and the German people. But then when you look at the Waffen-SS and all of the other people that they inspired to the cause around the world and that they worked with, it does seem that this was something larger than just Germany that was at stake and that was basically trying to defend itself. It was actually the beginnings of something of a racial awakening and an acknowledgement that they were under threat. What do you know about the ideology of Adolf Hitler in this regard? Do you think at the end of the day that he was really just looking out for the German people, or really was concerned with the overall survival of the larger kin group, the Germanic people, and extending out from there?
Well, the documentary concludes, and I believe this 100%, that although people outside Europe never knew, people inside Europe knew that this was a holy war. You know, if you look at, the Bolsheviks are coming from the east, the atheists, and they're just, it's the second coming of Genghis Khan. Whereas if you look at Hitler's allies, and his own army itself was half Christian, half Protestant, his allies of Italy, Croatia, Hungary, Bulgaria, you know, they're all Christian countries at that time. So the problem was that people outside of Europe never knew this because of the propaganda, and so a lot of Christians died on D-Day, you know, fighting the Germans, when all the time it was a war, a civil war between the Christian states of Europe against the coming Stalin Bolsheviks. And at one point, Hitler almost took the Soviet Union. And if it wasn't for the help of that other communist, Roosevelt, who kept him financially and militarily sending him equipment, kept him in the war till he could persuade America's is probably the wrong word, but if he could false flag so So the Americans would then join the war. He could get the nation to get behind him. And that eventually happened. So to put it, the bottom line to me was it was a holy war.
Now, Dennis, today we have Russia banning Nazi propaganda, as they put it, and revisionism in general, and glorifying the Red Army. Now, a lot of so-called white nationalists embrace Vladimir Putin and don't really look into national Bolshevism and Alexander Dugin too much, it seems. What do you think about the Eurasian bloc that is currently in existence and opposing the EU? And I don't like the EU, but it seems like they're not just opposing the EU, but the Western white people as well. What are your thoughts on this situation?
Well, the nationalists over there, you know, in Ukraine, which were being called, you know, Nazis, they're in a situation where, yes, they'll obviously hate Putin because of what Russians did to their country, and yet the West did it a lot as well to Germany. I mean, Germany's occupied today, so it's a difficult situation. I mean, Putin's certainly not pro Hitler, and the West isn't pro Hitler, but at some point, they'll be fighting with some of these, if only because they're an enemy of an enemy. So it's a difficult one. It really is a difficult one. As was World War II. You know, I mean, people sit back on the West and think, just for a second, why did we side with Stalin? You know, because America's at that time was always have a feeling, well, we hate communists, and yet they went in to help the communists. And yes, they were told Hitler was this big bad leader and all this kind of carry on. But the crux of the problem was that Roosevelt, that government, that embraced the Soviet Union because he had left-wing attitudes anyway. And that's why America sided with him. So it's a big mix of a thing. And you know, it's a difficult one. I myself can't really trust Putin. And I certainly don't trust the West. So where does that leave us? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we have a question from the chat earlier here. And it's a two-part question, but part of it ties into what we're discussing right now with the relations with Russia. So I feel it's an appropriate time. He writes here, Neocoon writes, ask Dennis about Hitler supposedly stopping panzer divisions before they could wipe out Brits at Dunkirk before they can make it back to England. And I guess I'll ask the second part of this in just a second. So I'll let you take on Dunkirk here.
Well, I think the documentary proves that Hitler never wanted a war with the British anyway. It was more Britain was after, you know, calming Germany down a little bit because they were getting too strong and suffered the consequence of getting defeated and pushed right back to Dunkirk. And if Hitler really wanted, I think we're trying to send a message out to the British saying, look, you know, we don't really want a war with you, you know. And he must have let them go because they were there for the taking. And all the equipment was left in France as well. So he probably thought, like, if I let them go, you know, they're not going to be going anywhere, and maybe we can come to some agreement. Because he did offer several peace attempts over that space of time. So that's my gut feeling, you know. A lot of people think it was a mistake, and I suppose in hindsight it was a mistake, but to me it was just throwing out an orange olive leaf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it seems to be. He also continues here, I'm reading a lot of books on the war on the Eastern Front, and many of the German generals felt that Hitler was micromanaging the war and was responsible for the confusing and constantly changing strategies against Russia. Was it possible for Germany to defeat Russia, and would that have required taking Moscow and all the railroad hubs in that area? So what are your thoughts on this, about Hitler micromanaging the war and causing the confusion in the conflict against Russia in Operation Barbarossa?
Well, it's easy to sit back now in hindsight and say that, but at the time, you know, he pretty much had to think on his feet anyway. And you've got to remember, they had no real resources in Germany. All the oil was coming from Romania, and you know, sometimes he taxed after you know, because he sent a unit down there to protect them oil fields, because without them, the Barbarossa would have ground to a halt. So there are certain factors and things which people tend to overlook and just simplify by saying Hitler interfered. But at the end of the day, he always fought on the attack. He never wanted to fight on his own soil, German soil, and his army was based that way. So when he attacked the Soviet Union, I think he had to win that war by 1942, because he knew America would eventually be coming into the war. And if he wouldn't beat the Soviet Union and took all their resources, then that could have been a whole different ballgame. But the problem with Stalingrad was the fact that, Moscow was just the fact that the Russians rallied and came charging through. It's just one of them things. But at Stalingrad, the fact that it was at Moscow, and I'm getting too mixed up. I think it was Moscow actually when the Japanese failed to attack in the east. If the Japanese had attacked in the east, then he wouldn't have been able to pull all the regiments away from the east to Moscow. Sorry, my mistake. And so they managed to rally at Moscow and force the Germans back. And obviously, Stalingrad was a problem with Paulus, where he wasn't quite the general needed for that campaign. I just thought he was more of a pen pusher.
Mm. Well, Barbarossa was even delayed, I think even a few months.
Yeah, 6 weeks.
A month and a half there. Yeah. In order for Italy to be basically bailed out, because they were not the same kind of fighters that the Germans were. So they had to delay moving into the Eastern Front there, and yeah, that is what got them mired down in a terrible winter at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, slow them up, because if they had reached Moscow 6 weeks earlier, again, it could have been a different proposition altogether. But because there's no real roads in Russia at that time, you know, just mud tracks, and so obviously everything slowed down to a halt. And when the snow came, it made things even worse. So definitely that 6 week period was worked against Hitler, definitely.
Also, for Neocon to consider is the amount of treason that was taking place among the top brass of the Wehrmacht and other organizations within the Third Reich. I spoke with author Richard Tidor, who wrote Hitler's Revolution, about this subject earlier this year, and it seems that there were traitors everywhere, and a lot of them came from the aristocracy, which perhaps seemed that they thought that their position, their birthright, was being threatened by this meritocracy, which was pretty much typified, I'd say, by the Waffen-SS. The meritocratic organization, where it didn't matter about your birth, but rather what you're capable of. And when I say it didn't matter about your birth, of course they were aware of race and the genetic aspects. But I mean, not necessarily being born into a noble family, which a lot of the top military from that old Prussian military. Yeah. Were. And so there was something of a division between a lot of the different groups, which were kind of divided between aristocratic and meritocratic. And go ahead, please.
No, I tend to agree with the author. Hitler always suspected the certain degree of the aristocracy not quite on the same wavelength as him, and that proved to be the case, obviously, with the attempted assassination of him later. It's funny, you don't hear these people complain, though, when he was taking France. And when things are going well, things are going well. But as soon as, the war turned and the Soviets looked like they were getting on top and certainly threatening to come into Western Europe and Germany, then that's when the time when these people showed their true colours and, obviously, he tried the assassination, mm-hmm. but he always felt he was proven right in the end.
It seems that some of the treasonous generals and other aristocrats who were siding with the Allies, that they didn't realize that this war was not going to end like even the First World War. This was going to be a severe punishment dealt upon the German people themselves, not just against Hitler, but against the German people. Mm-hmm. And a number of quotes make this clear. Marcus in the chat had a posted a good quote earlier from Eugene Gerstenmeier, who was president of the German Bundestag since 1954, and he was a member of the resistance group, which I can't say, Beckenkirch, during World War II. And he was a traitor, and he admitted he made a mistake. And he said, what we didn't want to comprehend in the German anti-Hitler resistance during war, we learned completely afterwards. This war wasn't led against Hitler, but against Germany. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he has a point there as well. There's a certain dislike of Germans from some European countries, which proved that with the ethnic Germans getting treated the way they were. I think it's just an accumulation of a lot of reasons, and that certainly was a big part of it.
Now, we've been talking about Adolf Hitler, of course, because this is the name of the documentary and who it's about. But his life and his story is intertwined with so many millions of other lives and so many millions of other stories. And he had some interesting secondary leadership. And I was wondering if you think that there are any secondary leaders who might deserve their own movie, that their stories are very inspiring and need to be told, and ones that we don't often hear about. Anybody else that has a pretty great story that's worth telling?
Well, probably the one, again, which has suffered most propaganda was Goebbels. He's been, him and his wife have been absolutely tainted with everything evil about Nazi Germany. So that would be a good starting point, because the only thing that people know about Goebbels is the word propaganda, which in them days didn't mean propaganda, it just meant publicity. But I'd like to see one on Goebbels.
Okay, yeah, that would be very good. He's an interesting story. Of course, they've done a few on Himmler and the occult forces of the SS. What do you think about some of the research that was being done by the National Socialists? Some of it was very, very interesting, and it was a little bit out there, but it does seem to have been blown up out of proportions when it's being tackled in various documentaries on the History Channel or Discovery or whatever. What do you think about that?
Not a good question, though, because I've been researching all that, obviously, with the occult and everything. And the thing, what they say is that Hitler was influenced by Blavatsky and Alice Bailey, their occult writings, and they say like that he was into the occult and so was Himmler, etc. But I haven't found anything, any evidence of that, only, again, post-war accusations. But what I did find out was that the Lucis Trust, which is tied into the United Nations, which was formed after World War II, Lucis Trust is a Luciferian organization. And has a library of books about Alice Bailey and Blavatsky and other members of that cult. And it seems that it's the Allies which are into this kind of thing. It's like the Rockefellers and the Freemasons. The Freemasons have this thing about looking for the light, and they believe the light is Lucifer, etc. All anti-Christian, all goes back to this, where I was saying it was a holy war going on. Because the three main countries who, apart from Russia, were all Masonic. That's France, that's Britain, and that's America. These are all Masonic countries. So I found out that all these people follow the same as what they were claiming Hitler was following.
That's very interesting. Interesting point. Because they banned the Masons. And what most people think about when they hear the word occult now is pretty much Masonry.
Yeah.
that's what they think about. And we see the effects of Freemasonic control, which, you know, maybe at one point was something of a benevolent force, but it was hijacked a long time ago.
Yeah.
And they've been putting out very, very deranged and degenerate and disgusting agenda. And so if there were, let's say, spiritual undertakings in the Third Reich that were not necessarily Christian, and some people embracing their Norse heritage, and of course they had different rune symbols, that should not be equated to the kind of occult material that we have today whatsoever.
That's right, and Hitler wouldn't have opened up the churches in the Ukraine as the German army passed through. They were getting blessed. You know, there was a certain amount of Christianity behind that war. You know, I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, Hitler wasn't a Christian, carry on. But I always say, you know, you've got to judge a person, look at their friends and look at their actions. And everything he did was to protect that Christianity in Europe. And even after the war, when Berlin fell, the Catholic Church was getting the Germans out of Europe and down to South America, you know, for a reason. And again, they got infiltrated again after the war also.
Take the point of view that they wanted positive Christianity and not the kind of Christianity, of course, that we have in the United States and elsewhere, which pretty much puts Jews as the chosen people. It seems that they actually wanted to do away with, if not parts of the Old Testament entirely. What have you seen about this?
Well, it's interesting because I think one of the 25 sets of laws brought out when Hitler first came to power. And one of them laws was freedom of religion. As long as, you know, people like today, you see Muslims on the streets parading and demonstrating and vice demonstrated back again. You know, as long as none of that went on, I think it was more than happy to let all religion flourish, because you've got to remember Muslims fought for Hitler as well. You know, at least 60,000 Muslims fought for him. So, you know, these are, as I said, it all goes back to this religious war, because they're God-fearing themselves. And they're the last people who want to see communists take over the whole of Europe. So the Muslims in the Balkans join with Hitler. So I don't see any real threat to any church apart from the Church of Satan.
Do you think that the 25 laws that were brought out could be or should be applied to our countries today? Or do you think that in general we could just use a lot of what the National Socialists put forth and adapt it to our nationalist, ethno-nationalist, white nationalist, whatever movements that we have today? Well, what are your thoughts on that? Would you want to take it almost entirely and transplant it to now, or basically just adapt some of the...
Well, last time I saw him, you know, I can't remember anything being that bad about him at all. So you put me on the spot. Yeah, I'd say certainly the majority of them are fine. I can't really think of any which wasn't. It was all, you know, for the benefit of a nation. And like I said, even the freedom, you know, to actually choose your religion. So, yeah, I mean, you put me on the spot. That's my answer, yes.
All right, great. Well, I want to open up the phone lines to people who want to call in, 347-633-9657. If you have any questions for Dennis Wise, creator of The Greatest Story Never Told, then please do call in. And if you're already on the line, please press 1 if you would like for me to take your call. And I just have a few more questions here that I'd like to ask you. Now, you have really woken up more people than any other person I can think about concerning excuse me?
Yeah, number one enemy of the Allies, yeah.
Well, yeah, and, you know, maybe George Lincoln Rockwell got some people to think about Adolf Hitler in a different way, but as for the last so many decades, I think that you're one of the main people, if not the number one guy, who got people to really reconsider Adolf Hitler. And how does that make you feel, Dennis?
Well, the original ambition of mine for the documentary was, as I said earlier, you know, at least to let people know the truth, let them decide for themselves, and even take off the guilt of people, which I know a lot of people do carry around. But what seems to have happened is that it's like an unstoppable force. It just carries on and carries on and carries on, and more people every day are watching it, and opinions are being turned. And if you'd have said to somebody before the documentary was made that I could change your opinion about Adolf Hitler, even bring some tears to some people about Adolf Hitler, I would have been laughed out of the room, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say so. And what's amazing about it is that many people take they do a complete 180. They go from the point of view that Adolf Hitler was really the most evil guy ever. Because they'll be questioning everything else that the mainstream media throws at them. They'll say, the media lies about this. They lie about that. It's all a bunch of BS. But then for some reason, they still say that Adolf Hitler is the number one villain. And this is the Alex Jones type of mindset where don't believe the media about anything else except for Adolf Hitler. It's definitely a good thing to get people to realize that this is the one person that you are not allowed to support, and there's a reason for it.
Yeah, I think quite a number of people, a lot of people, have looked at the Allied version and have felt for years something's not quite right. Some dots just don't fit, but couldn't work it out. It's impossible to work out because they didn't know all the facts. Now, suddenly when the documentary comes out and these facts are revealed, and many of the facts are revealed, suddenly everything connects, all the dots connect. And so this is why, again, now, like you said, a complete turn, where some people who actually hated Adolf Hitler now look at him as one of the greatest men of all time. And that's some kind of a turnaround.
Yeah, it is great. And I'm not sure where this is all heading, but do you have any ideas what could happen now that millions of people are starting to change their minds about this? What kind of effects do you think that you'll see in the world at large?
We're in unknown waters, to be honest. I mean, the internet is still fairly brand new. But if you don't know the story, then you can never change things. And if this documentary at some point inspires some general or some person which history has thrown up before who can change things around and make the world a better place and get rid of these lunatics while they're in charge, then, you know, so be it. You know, the documentary then has done as much as it ever could. But people have to know the story, and the story was that covered up, this documentary was needed, and it may just drift off into oblivion, who knows. But like you just said, there's millions out there now who do know the story and will pass the story on, and who knows where that will take us. Hopefully all the way, but who knows.
Dennis, do you mind going to another short musical break here? I have one of the tracks from your film, and then we could come back and perhaps talk about our current state of affairs and how the story that you told in the documentary perhaps relates to what's going on today. We alluded to it before, but we can get into it a little bit more in the next section here. So we'll be back in just under 3 minutes.
Okay.
Oh, geez. There we go. Welcome Back to the Solar Storm. You know, Dennis, I might have had that track mislabeled. Was that one featured in the film on the soundtrack?
No, but it was a good one.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it was a good one.
When I was listening, I realized, you know what, I don't even recognize that here. I'm hearing a little bit of an echo, but...
I could have used that one easily. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was one that was actually on YouTube that was about Adolf Hitler and had some of the same keywords from the film, where it was somebody who had been inspired by your documentary and put
a lot of people,
slideshow together about Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, well, a lot of people love that soundtrack, you know, because there were some great... It is a great soundtrack of a movie, you know. So, and it's dead dramatic music, just like you played. So it's really, that kind of glues all the documentary together, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Now, I wanted to talk about what we're seeing today. I mentioned earlier that Europe, America, Australia, all of these different countries that were involved with World War II, have been facing the same kind of onslaught, the guilt programming, the hate speech censoring, taking away of weapons, and flooding these different countries with the third world. We are in the third world war right now. It's just that I've discussed the play on words before, you know, the third world war. We have a war being waged where we're being invaded, but it's not in the classical sense, but it's a war nonetheless. What do you think is going to happen with this? Do you think white people, nationalists, will kind of rise up? They'll re-examine the past and redefine the future. What's going to take place here?
Well, for things to change, there's a couple of things. But one is America has to change its ways, because its support of Israel is key to the New World Order, which they're trying to impose. So. If there's any generals out there in America like who watch the documentary, be my guest. But failing that, you know, if there is a major Third World War, say with the Russians, that again would probably change things. Whether it changes things for the better or not is another thing. But certainly, I think, although I'm suspicious of Putin, I do think he is a little bit more humanitarian than some of the other leaders. Or puppet leader, should I say, from the West.
It's just amazing that allegedly former KGB guy like Putin is actually viewed favorably because of how low our politicians have sunk.
Exactly.
Quite amazing. We have a question earlier from Saigar in the chat, and you had mentioned this idea briefly earlier that Hitler had actually survived World War II, and that he's in Argentina or somewhere in South America. And I guess FBI documents were recently released showing their investigation into this this notion that Hitler survived. He didn't actually kill himself. What do you think about this and also Harry Cooper's Shark Hunters? What evidence have you seen to debunk this, or what made you sure that Hitler had actually committed suicide in Berlin, like he said he was going to, and as you put in the film?
Well, I don't think we can ever be 100% that Hitler committed suicide, but I do believe he did die in Berlin, and probably by cyanide poisoning. But all these stories, again, are coming out after the fall of the Reich, and there's a lot of money to be made. I've yet to see any evidence of him in South America or Iceland or wherever they say he went to. And the fact that they're saying now that the FBI have brought out information lately, as you said, because of everything on the internet, the free information, there's a lot of people, a lot of things are coming out presently about Hitler, which is trying to confuse with misinformation. There was something the other day that they discovered papers now that they really did have these gas chambers, and etc. I think it was on CNN at one point. But all of this is all contrived. There's nothing. There's, people can believe what they want, but there's no hard evidence at all that Hitler escaped. And the fact that he was ill at the time, and you know, he was declaring that Berlin was his last stand, and I don't think he could ever dream of ever starting all over again. So everything points to the fact that it all ended in Berlin, and when you look at it, probably that's where it should have.
Well, some of the eyewitness accounts in Hellstorm indicate that Hitler had aged terribly in the past few years of the war leading up to the last stand at Berlin. And it basically, as he was considered by many to be the physical embodiment of the Reich, of the German folk, he also represented its battered and bruised and
demise
in his face itself. People were commenting just how torn up he looked. And you look at how much even just a U.S. president will age with his cushy job in four years.
Obama.
And then, then you consider what it must have been like being Adolf Hitler in those years. If he was able to survive, it would not have been a very good existence, I don't think.
I don't think so. I tend to agree. I think like some stories are destined to end at some point, and everything tells me it was destined to end in Berlin.
Okay, we have some callers on the line now, so let's go to the call board. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Who is this, and do you have a question or comment for Dennis Wise?
Caller. Is this me on the air?
Yes.
Oh, yes, great. Hey, this is Roger. This is Roger in California.
Hi.
Welcome, Roger.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to thank you, Kyle, for getting Dennis on the radio again, and I wanted to thank Dennis for what he's done with this greatest story never told.
No problem. Thank you.
I got onto your site and bought the whole nine yards that you sell there, and of course I saw it all on YouTube before that. But one point I wanted to make: I just turned 65, and as I get older and older, the depth of the lies that we've been fed just gets more and more intense. And it isn't even a matter about whether you're pro or anti-Hitler. The main thing is that people wake up to the fact that they've been lied to for their whole damn lives.
That's
to me is the one of the greatest possibilities of what Dennis has done is to create something that, modern people who are addicted to video, type information can see, and it'll point out, if they're sharp at all, which is not always the case, that they've been lied to. And hopefully that they will come out with new eyes and see in their media everything. I mean, where I live out here, it's just nonstop lying. Worse yet, they build more lies on top of lies that have been built on top of lies. And it's just a corrupt and rotten structure all the way through to academia, schools, media, everything. It's all lies.
It's all controlled. It's all controlled from Hollywood. I mean, most people learn the history from Hollywood. And then they control the media, they control the publishing companies, they control the press, TV, everything. It all moves in unison. So the story stays... Well, the lies stay accurate because one backs up the other, and people are fooled. And like the piece, I don't know whether you heard the piece of the trailer that Carl played early on. One of the guys says, if they can pull this off, they can pull anything off. And that leads you down the road to 9/11. That's an all new ball game. But if they can pull that one off, which I know they have done, then anything is possible.
Well, I didn't have much more to say, but to basically thank you. And thank you, Kyle, for what you do.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for calling in, Roger. All right, we have Pajo on the line here. I'm going to try to bring him up. The system's freezing a little bit. Pajo.
Hello.
Welcome.
How are you doing, guys? Hi, Dennis. Hi, Kyle.
Hi.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's such a fantastic project that Dennis has done there. I've been proud to share that far and wide with
people
that ordinarily you could not mention the name Hitler to. So I think it's fantastic. You know, all in all, the story is an interesting one. I mean, because of course we have all these different aspects like the Zionist Nazi collaboration, the transfer agreement. We have, and you know, that makes sense. He wanted to transit Jews to Palestine. The Zionists had the plan for Israel anyway. It seemed like a cozy deal that went sour. And for me, the one thing that I think is most remarkable is that it's clear to me that Hitler and the National Socialists were trying to instill ethnic pride in the Germans that would rival the Jewish ethnocentrism. He was trying to create ethnocentrism in the Germans because he knew they needed that to ever take on Jewish power. And that is the one side of it. When all said and done about, was he Rothschild? Was he working for the bankers? Did he create Israel? Blah, blah, blah. It's that aspect that I know that he was definitely fighting it. So, but my one question to you, Dennis, is they often make a big thing about the amount of Jews that were in the Nazis. You know, that book that was released, Hitler's Jewish Soldiers. I mean, numbers, how true do you think that is?
Well, that
I
guy.
Mean, I know we had the Sunder Command and commanders, but in general, how many? Because there's this sort of feeling that there was a hell of a lot of Jews high up in the Nazis. Maybe some of them were opposed to communism and opposed to Zionism. I mean, maybe they were genuine.
The book itself wasn't written by a pro Hitler guy. It was quite anti Nazism, and his facts and figures were well researched, and I haven't got any doubt to doubt him. So when he's saying such facts, I can believe it because there was a high, as you say, a high mix of Jewish blood over the years into German blood at all levels. And this is the reason why Hitler wanted to create some portion of Germany with just German blood. You know, obviously the SS were mating with these other women. I mean, first started off with. They were mating with the wives to produce a baby, but Himmler didn't think that was quick enough, so he brought in other women and SS, you know, made love with them, like, and just to create a pure German race, if you like, in Germany. Now you ask the question: is that racist? Does, you know, shouldn't an Italian race be somewhere in Italy, or a British race, pure British race, in Britain? I feel that, you know, the answer to that question is yes. So, you know, for him to do that, he was saving his own mixed blood, which was going on at that time in that country. You know, there's no doubt about it. He wanted national pride, and that was one way of trying to succeed with it.
Yep, absolutely. What do you think the turning point was? Do you think realistically they ever had a chance of winning?
Yeah, because that army was capable, but I think, as I said earlier, I think it needed to take the Soviet Union before 1942, and they almost did. That was the turning point. The fact that they didn't, if they'd have got the resources of the Soviet Union and the manpower, okay, you could argue, like, you know, the Allies finally got the atomic bomb, but certainly that would have been a big turning point in the war, as far as the ordinary military campaigns.
And they likely would have had millions of Russians
sure.
and other Slavs fighting on their side.
Fighting on their side, it's a lot of people.
Realizing the treasures of the German civilization greatly outweigh the horrors of the Soviet Union.
Mm.
Yeah, it would have been an amazing thing to see communism smashed once and for all.
Yeah.
Padgett, I'll let you comment in just a second, but I had a question here for Dennis. Do you think that even though the Germans lost in the Eastern Front against communism, do you think that they basically dealt a death blow of sorts? I know that we're still surrounded by the same Jewish Bolshevist communist structure. but it seems that they didn't get to accomplish their plans as quickly as they would like. They didn't get to completely take over Europe because they had been so weakened in the struggle against Germany.
Yeah, I mean it was a 6-year war, so it did hold things up for sure. But I think they're well on the way now with the communist structure that they have in mind.
That's true, but when you consider that the first point of how to communize the West is to have a central bank in control of it all, we've got that.
Yeah, that's been going on for quite some time, and the war with Germany didn't interrupt all that and held things up for quite some time, because Hitler did educate us to the best of it all. In fact, if Hitler hadn't been around, we'd probably be no wiser today what these bankers are doing.
Sure, yeah.
Well, Padgo, anything else you'd like to add to the show tonight?
Oh, no, that was it, really. I just wanted to phone in and speak to the great man.
Thanks very much. Pleasure.
You're most welcome.
Appreciate the call.
Have a great show, guys. I'll continue listening.
Thanks, Padgo.
See you later.
All right. We have possibly a call from Marcus. I'm not sure if he's just listening. Is that you, Marcus? Hello, caller. You're on the air. Going once, going twice. All right, they might just be listening or not there at all. Okay, so, Dennis, we've gone over a lot tonight. Anything you'd like to wrap up with or comment further on that we've already discussed? And if you want to talk about how people can view the film yet again, and also they can get the DVDs, and anything you'll be working on in the future.
Well, for those people who want to know how all this started, all this New World Order idea started, I'm working on a documentary at the moment. There's three parts up on YouTube now on my channel, Dennis Wise channel. And there's a couple of parts on the website. But the main documentary, obviously, which people need to watch first and understand, is Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told, which, we don't actually sell it. We actually give it away with people wanting to be a member. But certainly, once you understand that, and then you watch the other documentary, which is A New World Order, Communism by the Back Door, You'll soon understand why all this conflict was taking place then, and why all this conflict is taking place today. And
can you give us a teaser as to where this began and a little bit of how it's been implemented?
Well, it started down at with the British in South Africa with the Boer War. And the Rothschilds were financing the war down there, and Cecil Rhodes. Was also a wealthy guy, spent a lot of money and left a lot of money to continue his idea of a one-world government, where they went on to form the Council of Foreign Relations, which actually runs America today. In fact, there's a wonderful piece on the net of a list of all the people who worked for Clinton. Was 99.9% all from the Council of Foreign Relations. And that, again, is, spreads to the Trilateral Council. It's all tied up. All these presidents are puppets. All these prime ministers are puppets. It all stems from this dream of Cecil Rhodes and the Rothschilds at the turn of the century. World War One, obviously, was a bit of a hold up on things. And as you mentioned earlier, when it got to the end of World War Two, they learned the lesson from World War One and totally shut down Germany and denazified everybody. And then as you move into the conflicts of today, you'll understand why they took down Gaddafi, why they're trying to take down Syria. It all comes so much clearer, as a couple of your listeners have just said.
Have you looked into Coudenhove Kalergi, Practical Idealism? This guy was the father of the EU, and he advocated for basically the mongrelization of the European people. And he's very much praised within this New World Order structure. So, yeah, Coudenhove-Kalergi, have you...
No, I'm there, but that is, you know, he has it the nail on the head there, where by mongrelizing all the countries in Europe, it kills nationalism. If it kills nationalism, and you're breaking up the family as well, you're turning people into individuals who then, if they're attacked by whatever reason, you know, having maybe their income's taken away or lessened, or they've no jobs, they've got nowhere to turn because they're individuals. You certainly can't do much on your own. And that is the plan, to break it all down and have people just do what you're told, or else you'll suffer.
All right. Dennis, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. I appreciate the conversation.
Okay.
And best wishes moving forward with your fantastic work.
Yeah, and yourself, Carl. I wish you all the best, pal.
Thanks. Appreciate it. And thank you to all of the people out there who have been listening and who have contributed to the documentary that I've got going on, Hellstorm, and who are sharing these programs around. I really do thank you. And I'll be back again next week. I'm going to go out with a track here that I saw Dennis had liked on YouTube, and it goes along with a great video, but this is called The Lion.
You watch those nature documentaries on the cable?
Yeah.
You see the one about lions?
Yeah.
Look, this lion, he's the king of the jungle. Huge mane out there. He's laying down under a tree. He's so big. He's so hot. He doesn't want to move. Now, the little lion comes. They start messing with him. Biting his tail, biting his ears. He doesn't do anything. She starts messing with him, coming home, making trouble. Still, nothing. Now, the other animals, they notice this. They start to move in. The jackals, the hyenas. Barking at him, laughing at him. They nip his toes and eat the food that's in his domain. They do this and they get closer and closer and bolder and bolder, till one day that lion gets up and tears the shit out of everybody. Runs like the wind, eats everything in his path. because every once in a while, the lion has to show the jackals who he is.
Und niemals verzagen und niemals verzweifeln!